Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. This week, we'll have more of politics, food, and whatnot. Lots of juicy stuff that didn't make it to the table last week. We'll go from the end of strawberry season to the end of Americans' civil liberties, until recently protected by the Constitution. The civil liberties, that is, not the strawberries. Can we fit this all together? I don't know. Fair warning, this week you'll be hearing my voice more and other voices less. I hope you'll stay tuned anyway. Lately, I've been focusing a lot on food and agriculture. I'm not sure why. Maybe it's because this is one of the very few parts of our culture that haven't been completely taken over by gigantic psychopathic corporations intent on total plunder and pillage. Largely taken over, yes, but not completely. Last Saturday, I motorcycled up to Ellington to check out the weekly farmer's market. I had a chat there with a surprisingly young chicken farmer named Alexis, who is more or less the opposite of Frank Perdue. She runs a small poultry farm in Ellington, produces eggs and chickens, and, in season, two different breeds of turkey. Couldn't sell me a chicken at the moment, though. The latest batch was still too young, still pecking around the farmyard, about 2 miles away, just off Middle Butcher Road. So, chickens have a life cycle. Who knew? Well, Alexis would be glad to sell me a local, organically fed, free-range, antibiotic-free chicken if I could come back in 2 weeks. I could indeed. I left Alexis and fell into a chat with William. He's a carpenter by training. A couple years back, he decided that what the tiny rural town of Ashford needed was a gourmet coffee roaster. Offhand, that sounds like a hard way to earn a living out in the middle of God's country. But in a recession, it's pretty hard to earn a living as a carpenter, too. There's no construction in Connecticut to speak of. Once again, I discussed roasters. Not chickens this time, but coffee bean roasters. And I took home a bag of William's product. He recommended the Papua New Guinea beans. And the liquid coffee I later made from them was very good indeed. So with food, you can still find small producers producing a quality product locally in a sustainable manner in touch with the community. That's no longer possible in, say, consumer electronics, or automobiles, or clothing, or furniture, or banking, or government, and it's gotten rare in music. And the powers that be are trying hard to make it rare in public schooling. But you can still get small and local and high quality and sustainable and family owned in agriculture. If you look hard enough, and if you can adjust to old-fashioned agriculture's natural rhythms. And that means not just a 2-week wait for chicken, but no more asparagus until next May, and no more strawberries until next June. As a consolation prize, when strawberries end, blueberries begin. Who knew? All my life, in my diet, I have been ridiculously out of touch with nature. My goal is to move from ridiculously out of touch to only moderately out of touch. Purity is close to impossible. Soon there will be local corn, tomatoes, carrots, onions, and green peppers. But there will never be local wheat or rice. No local soy sauce or black pepper or mushrooms or pinto beans or pretzels and other necessities. There's yet another good coffee roaster, a pleasant bicycle ride away in Glastonbury. And William up in Ashford. But the coffee beans I consume come from Sumatra, or more recently, Papua New Guinea, which is just around the corner, if you happen to live in New Zealand. Local organically raised meat is available, not just poultry, but pork, lamb, goat, beef, even buffalo. But wouldn't you know it, I've been working on eating less meat, not more. So purity is impossible. But I think I can do better than I've been doing the past 60 years or so. And speaking of meat, gets us to the big business mass meat industry. as rotten a branch of corporate enterprise as you'll find this side of Wall Street. Many beef scandals keep popping up, briefly, in the popular media. This year, first there was an American cow with mad cow disease. That scandal faded away quickly. Then pink slime had 15 minutes of fame. Well, maybe 15 days, off and on. In case you missed it, pink slime is some beef byproduct swept off the slaughterhouse floor, steam cleaned, adulterated with ammonia compounds to keep the bacteria in check, and blended in with the hamburger your supermarket sells. There was a mini furore, and some supermarkets claimed they would stop carrying hamburger that contained pink slime. You'll have to trust them on this, as pink slime does not have to be listed as an ingredient on the label. Protecting our children's health even further, the U.S. Agriculture Department courageously announced that school districts would not be required to buy pink slime-infested hamburger under the school lunch program. They're still welcome to buy it, but not required to. Thanks, guys, for helping to keep America safe. Now, here's the latest.
You can't taste it. You probably can't even see it. But one of these steaks is a potential health risk. Fox 31 Denver goes undercover to expose how some restaurants use meat glue. Is this hidden ingredient on your favorite menu? Monday on Fox 31 Denver News at 9. Your questions answered.
The latest beef industry scandal is transglutaminase. With this enzyme, they glue small pieces of meat together, press it, and have it look like a big, thick cut of meat. The good news is that, unlike pink slime, there are some labeling requirements for glued-together meat. The bad news is that most of these Frankenstein cuts are sold to restaurants and caterers, and the diner never gets to see the label. If you're lucky, that filet mignon you ordered was made from scraps of filet mignon, glued together with transglutaminase. If you're not lucky, that filet mignon was made of scraps of rump roast, glued together in a filet mignon shape with transglutaminase. And if you can't pronounce transglutaminase, you can just call it meat glue. The corporate news media love this sort of story. They can expose shoddy practices that do small harm. That gives you three false impressions. First, that the sins of big business are small and manageable. False impression number two, that the sins of big business can be caught, stopped, and corrected. False impression number three, that your corporate news media are dependable watchdogs. Through hard-hitting, courageous investigative reporting, they will seek out and catch evildoers and protect the public. Wrong on all three counts, but there you have it. Here's a pretty decent story on the issue, as these things go. It's from a Pittsburgh TV station, WTAE. WTAE resides deep in the belly of the corporate capitalist beast. It's owned by Hearst Corporation. Yes, William Randolph Hearst's outfit. The very gang that brought us the Spanish-American War. Okay, with a little help from President McKinley, the Republican Party, and the military-industrial complex of 1898. Here Hearst brings us not rough-riding military action, but action news. We'll have to skip the pictures, but let's have a listen.
Tonight, an Action News investigation uncovers a little-known secret kept hidden in the kitchens of restaurants.
The prime steak that you think that you're getting, the filet that you think you're getting, may actually be pieces of stew meat that have been glued together. Investigative reporter Jim Parsons exposes how it's done and why it really poses a health risk for unsuspecting consumers, all of us, Jim.
Yeah, Wendy, several restaurant owners tell me that chefs right here in western Pennsylvania are using this stuff, meat glue, in their kitchens. Now, critics say consumers are being tricked into thinking they're getting an expensive steak when, in reality, they're getting Frankensteak.
What I would normally use this stuff for would be for stews.
What started as this is now transformed into this.
That looks like a normal piece of steak.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
It looks like a piece of filet mignon.
Yeah, it does.
Chef Doug Shirey is master of the kitchen at Mighty Oak Barrel in Oakmont, a restaurant that does not use meat glue. But on this day, Doug shows us the secret of how it works.
And we're going to sprinkle it in generously, like so, until it's covered well.
Sprinkle some of this stuff on beef cuts that would otherwise have gone into the grinder.
I can already tell that the meat is, like, sticking together.
Wrap it up tightly, put it in the fridge, and 12 hours later, you've gone from stew meat to prime filet steaks, and you'll never know the difference. Not even an expert can tell. It's called transglutaminase enzyme, but most people just call it meat glue.
What is it exactly? What is meat glue?
My understanding is that they're taking the clotting agents out of animals' pigs' and cows' blood, and they're using that essentially to clot together chunks of meat.
Nigel Tudor is a Washington County cattle rancher.
Just like a clot forms, you know, whenever you get a cut, except instead of healing up a wound, it's taking pieces of meat, which are protein, and clotting them to each other in the one giant chunk. So
yummy.
Yummy, yeah, exactly.
So this has been sitting in there all night long, huh?
Yes, it has.
The day after sprinkling chunks of stew meat with meat glue, Doug now has one solid loaf that he slices into fillets. And even raw, it's difficult to tell this fillet has been glued together. And impossible to tell after it's been on the grill, even side by side with a real McCoy, a genuine filet mignon steak.
Look at that. It's amazing, huh?
And now it's time for the taste test. Doug and I sample the real steak, then the steak that's been glued together.
You can't taste the difference.
It tastes great.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Glued meat, who would think? Glued meat would taste great.
Mighty Oak Barrel's owners say their supplier recently tried to sell them meat glue.
There's a deceptive quality that we don't like about it, and there's also a health and sanitation quality that we absolutely disagree with.
While the federal government says meat glue itself is generally recognized as safe, food safety experts have concerns.
There's a food safety problem. I think that would be the number one concern.
The County Health Department's Steve Steingart demonstrates how glued meat turns scraps that have been handled and possibly contaminated into the inside of a fillet, and that is a problem.
The danger would be that this would be the outside, but now it's the inside because it's bound together. So this would have to be cooked, because if you ordered that rare, there's a possibility that this steak, there could be growth on it.
The problem is a consumer wouldn't necessarily know they've ordered a glued steak. Federal regulations required glued meat to be labeled as formed or reformed on packaging, but that does not apply to restaurants.
When it comes to meat glue, you don't think restaurants want their customers to know about this stuff?
I don't think that they do, because it just is not something that, once you understand what it is, that you really would want to eat.
Meat is something you buy at your neighborhood local butcher shop. Glue is something you buy at Home Depot. Those two words just don't belong in the same sentence.
And because restaurants are not required to disclose whether or not they're using transglutaminase in your steak, Steve Steingart from the health department says there's only one way to find out. Ask. Ask your waiter, ask the chef, ask the restaurant owner. If the answer is yes, they're using transglutaminase, and you're still sticking around, make sure you get that steak. Well done. In the newsroom, Jim Parsons, Channel 4 Action News.
Okay, there we have the story of meat glue. And Action News has alerted us to another small problem with corporate-controlled mass-production industrial meat factories. The real horrors of the system don't make the local news, though. The federally subsidized ecological havoc caused by huge cattle ranches in the West. The horrors of the confinement feedlot, where cows are fattened on corn and soybeans while standing in their own excrement and being doped with antibiotics, because cows are not designed to digest corn or soybeans or to stand around in excrement. Then there's the horrendous working conditions of the slaughterhouse, which is why the corporate owners like their workers to be illegal immigrants. Not only will these people work cheap, but if they start to complain about working conditions, let alone try to organize a union, you just call the immigration authorities, and they will put a speedy end to labor unrest by arresting, imprisoning, and deporting the unhappy workers, all at taxpayer expense. Again, don't look for the real crimes on your local news. But finagling like pink slime and meat glue can be safely outed and then forgotten about while business continues as usual. But enough of agricultural rantings by my favorite political commentator, though possibly not yours. Let's take a brief break for some music.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Leonard Cohen. You heard how we went from food to politics and government, just like us. Well, he did mention the homicidal bitchin' that goes down in every kitchen, and from that he moved on to the mighty ship of state. And we shall move on to there too, though perhaps the mighty police station of state would be a better metaphor than ship. And speaking of immigrant workers being exploited in slaughterhouses, excuse me, in meatpacking plants, we'll soon hear from Alexander Coburn on America's changing racial demographics and changing political system. A system now best named by a word other than democracy, he thinks. Hint starts with F. But first, one more food item. I found this product advertised in a supermarket circular. Here it is. And I just had to share it. It's a product called Water Enhancer. It sells for only $3.49, and it comes in a cute plastic bottle that looks like a large water drop. Water Enhancer, only $3.49 for the generous 1.62-ounce bottle. Makes 24 servings. I presume you just add water. So if you're still drinking free, plain, ordinary water, this may be just the product you've been looking for. I did the math, and at $3.49 per 1.62 ounces, the stuff costs less than $275 a gallon, or just over $55 for a fifth of a gallon. Now you'd easily spend $55 for a bottle of the finest single malt scotch, right? Or even for a third-rank Grand Cru Bordeaux. So next time you're at your corporate-owned chain supermarket, admiring those famous supermarket tomatoes, why not wander over to the gourmet water aisle and check out Water Enhancer? You'll be glad you did, and your wife will notice the difference. And if she doesn't, well, maybe that cute little chicken farmer down the road might. There's no telling, is there? Okay, enough shopping tips for today, and let's take a look at Alexander Coburn. This is his column in Counterpunch for May 18. I've condensed it a bit for radio. It's titled, Brave New World, Brave New Majority. The news is in. White births are no longer a majority in the United States. And what a mess Whitey has made of things. One horrible move after another. What will we Americans be handing on to the new majority? The news is not good. At almost exactly the moment we yielded majority status, our president and our Congress were putting the finishing touches on our modern system of government. That system of government is known as fascism. The mobs who flooded into the streets to celebrate the execution of Osama bin Laden were not cheering for America, land of the free and constitutional propriety. They were lauding brute, lawless, lethal force. In this election year, we hear a lot of tub-thumping about American freedoms, but if there's any nation in the world that is well on its way to deserving the label of fascist, it is the United States. Fascism, among other things, is a system of extreme, methodical state repression, violent in contour and threat. This is buttressed by ultra-nationalist mythology, a militarist culture, and imperial ambition. In the 1980s, America started locking up its poor people. 7 million adults were under correctional supervision in 2009. A fascist system uses constant harassment. Last year, there were more than 600,000 stop-and-frisks in New York City, overwhelmingly of blacks and Hispanics. Fascist regimes have been particularly cruel towards what they consider sexual deviancy. U.S. sex offender registries doom 750,000 people, many of them convicted on trumpery charges, to pale simulacra of real life. Others endure castration and open-ended incarceration. Fascist regimes are ultimately the expression of corporate power, and they repress labor. The onslaught here began with the Taft-Hartley Act in 1947 and continued with methodical ferocity during the Reagan and Clinton years. Obama reneged on pledges to make organizing easier. He froze the wages of federal workers, and he advanced so-called free trade across the globe. Attacks on collective bargaining are pervasive. Big money's grip on both parties ensures corporate control, no matter who is nominally in charge. A fascist regime is the sworn foe of the right to assemble, the sworn foe of unauthorized marches and encampments. We see this now around the NATO summit, and we will endure more of it at the national conventions. America is a network of SWAT teams and kindred state-employed thugs on permanent red alert. A fascist regime spies obsessively on its citizens. Study U.S. laws on secret surveillance since the Patriot Act, and you will find procedures that would have been the envy of the East Germans. Ultimately, a fascist state claims the right to imprison its victims without term or hope of redress or legal representation. As the executive power in the form of the president, it claims the right to kill its enemies, whether citizens, like Al-Awlaki, or others, as in Guantanamo, without judicial review. In other words, rule by decree, which is what Hitler's Enabling Act won him in March 1933. We live in a fascist country. It will take a while, many decades, to prize waspdom's tenacious fingers from power. But maybe the new majority won't merely ratify evolving fascist arrangements. So ends Alexander Coburn's Brave New World, Brave New Majority. Coburn is a quirky commentator, and I've quarreled with several of his ideas, but I think he's pretty close to the mark this time. And on that note of doom and gloom, and fascism triumphant, and no more asparagus and strawberries until 2013, but at least the coffee's good, and local too, if you happen to live in Papua New Guinea. Therefore, I thank you for listening. Advise illegitimi non carborundum, don't take any wooden transglutaminase, and hope to catch you again next week. Ciao.
It's coming to America first, the cradle of the best and of the worst. It's here they got the range and the machinery for change, and it's here they got the spiritual thirst. It's here the family's broken, and it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to the USA. Democracy is coming.